based on a true scary, contains adult themes, language, and all-around scary shit. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Based on a True Scary. This is Trisha. I'm here with Jake, as always. How are you doing, Jake?
I'm completely nervous.
Yeah.
Some technical difficulties.
But we're going to be fine.
Yeah, we're fine.
Because we have a very calming presence with us today. Actually, joining us remotely from New York, our guest is, he's a writer for thedad.com and a member of the Murderfist Sketch Comedy Group. Welcome, Jared.
Hello.
Hi. How's Thanks. New York? It's very late there.
It's late, it's cold, and it's still a city of nightmares. So
Perfect.
Things are going great.
I do miss
city of nightmares.
I miss it,
though. I love that.
I know, I love it. Well, today, Jared's going to be helping us look at the film. I guess you could call it a movie. We'll get into that later.
Is it?
I have questions. It's The Town That Dreaded Sundown, the original, the 1976 version of The Town That Dreaded Sundown. So, yeah, it came out in 1976, directed by Charles B. Pierce, written by Earl E. Smith. They both kind of worked as a team, but they didn't really do anything. They did the Legend of Boggy Creek, which I guess was like kind of a thing. And then Bootleggers, Winds of Autumn, but really nothing else after this. Budget was $400,000, and then the box office gross was $5 million.
That was surprising.
Yeah. And then it came out on Christmas Eve, too. Which was kind of, I don't know. I guess that's kind of a thing that horror movies do.
Yeah.
But people went and saw it. Rotten Tomatoes gave it 42% critic, 41% audience. Metacritic had 47%. By the way, these all had like 5 votes, though. So
I think there was Metacritic in 1978.
it was rampant. Rated R, hour 30 minutes. And then the truth claim, the trailers said, Charles B. Pierce brings this incredible, shocking, and true story to the screen. And then in the movie, the narrator, who's like our friend throughout the movie, is like, the incredible story you're about to see is true. Where it happened, how it happened, only the names have been changed. So yeah, guys, thoughts on this movie?
Well, I felt like it was Hitchcock Presents meets the Andy Griffith Show.
I legit have, is it a horror movie? Is it a Twilight Zone episode? Is it the Dukes of Hazzard? I literally don't know.
It was labeled as a one of the first slasher films. 2 years before Halloween, it was released.
Was this before or after Texas Chainsaw?
Ooh, good question.
Oh.
I'm looking it up right
Google
now.
That. I
Because it felt
say,
very Texas Chainsaw to me, but like a like a Goosebumps version.
Yeah, you know? if Disney made a sequel to Texas Chainsaw. It was so weird. Like the little narrator guy starts out and he's setting the scene of this small, peaceful town, which the first shot I was like, is this the exact same set that they shot Back to the Future in? Because there's the big clock tower and everything. It just looked like a total set. And it's like everybody's having a good time.
I love him. I love his opening narration too. Like the beginning of the movie is just like, it's great to be a baby boomer. The government had just given us all $100,000. Everybody was happy.
It felt like a ride at Disneyland, the Epcot Center.
Come along, won't you?
Exactly. No, it was ridiculous. And then we're just like, okay, now the beginning of the Reign of Terror.
Yeah, I read that they hired a lot of local actors.
Okay, that would make a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like Marianne from Gilligan's Island and one of the cops I think I've seen before. And like everyone else was just like Petey from the gas station.
Yeah. Do you want to be in the movies?
The moving pictures? So we get the first murder, right? Sunday, March 3rd. It's like we cut to a couple in a car, Linda May and Sammy, and
you
she's
mean
like
a young girl and her father, I think.
What is with all of the couples in this movie had a disturbing age difference.
Oh, and I also took some notes on that. I know that's pretty prominent. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you also notice that like none of the couples You know, they're supposed to be like in their cars fooling around. They were just maybe cuddling. Like, this is a town of a bunch of prudes.
I had questions about the first guy with the first murder, which I don't think the first murder is a murder. They live.
It's technically,
right?
They lived. Yeah,
they live. And he just like puts his head in his lap.
Yeah.
In her lap. Like, what is that move? She's just like, oh, no, I'm tired. Or no, she's like, oh, I heard something. And he's like, that's the oldest trick in the book.
Yes.
What? Like, what trick?
To avoid rape? Like, I have
That's how all women avoid sleeping with me in this creepy abandoned highway.
Yeah, he's heard that before. And then, like, luckily they're interrupted by the Phantom Killer, who I like to call Mr. Heavy Breather. Yeah, exactly. Mr. Heavy Breather, who's just like the amount of time they show the pillow just getting sucked into his mouth as he's murdering people is insane.
What? Yeah. Like, what was that, an apparatus, or did he just like give himself? Did he just asphyxiate himself under that thing? Like, I noticed
he didn't
make
a mouth hole. So he was really just dying.
Yeah, I think
he was looking for air.
Yeah. Yep. But he strikes. They survive. Linda and Sammy, I think, are their names. And then, like, we get the credits and very sexy music, almost James Bond-esque music that's, like, just a shot over Linda struggling to live on the side of the road, and then she flags someone down. So she fine. They fine.
I liked the opening credits, too. I'm a sucker for title cards, and I thought this was really good. I will say, like, all fooling aside, this movie has my favorite horror movie title ever. Even before I saw it, I've always loved the title of this movie. I think it's great.
Oh, yeah. And the poster is actually amazing, too.
Great poster. Yeah.
Yep. Beautiful artwork.
Unfortunately, the movie, not so much.
The remake's actually good. I thought the remake was good.
Well, it's not a remake. It's a sequel.
Oh, that's why it was so different.
We can talk about
it
later.
There we go.
Both.
Okay, where are we at? So, yes, Linda's in the hospital. We meet the sheriff and his buddies, who say that she was bit on her back, stomach, and breasts, that they have been literally chewed.
Ugh.
And that we have a very strange person on our hands. The happy town no more. They're like, we got to get patrol cars out there. And then I believe that's when we meet the comic relief of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Deputy Benson, who, by the way, that's the director.
No way.
He's Are you serious?
Yes.
Wait, it's a spark plug?
Spark plug, yes. Otherwise known as spark plug.
It's just like, what if Barney Fife was a barely holding it together sociopath, and we like team him up with Boss Hogg from Dukes of Hazzard? Like, that's what that plot was.
100%.
I have a note where I say, "Oh, I said it felt like the car chase scenes later feel like Dukes of Hazzard."
Oh my god!
Yeah,
this guy, he has his own theme music when he's on screen, like weird bumbly theme music. I don't know what the thought was there.
It's just so funny because they do such a weird job of making him, like, you don't realize he's supposed to be a comic relief, I feel like, until the second or third time we get a scene with him.
Yes.
Like, in the first scene, I thought it was supposed to be about the sheriff, like, just sort of being like, oh, the sheriff, like, they're all really oddly kind of, I feel like, liberal for Texas, Arkansas of the time. They're all, like, very open about the fact that, like, teens go have sex in the cars, and they're just like, oh, we should tell him to stop doing that while there's a killer on the loose. But nobody seems like pearl clutchy about the matter.
No.
And then it's like
pearl clutchy.
Then, like, you meet the guy who's yelling at the woman on the phone, and it feels like that scene is supposed to serve the sheriff. But then that guy keeps coming up, and it's like two or three scenes later, you're like, do they think this is funny? Because he's terrifying.
Well, I almost had this thought of, like, I didn't know how this movie was going to end, and I'm like, are they going to insinuate that this guy's maybe, like, the Phantom Killer?
It's
like,
gotta be
why
him.
Does he
gotta
exist?
Be him.
Right, 100%. So then we move into the second murder, pretty much, after we meet Benson. So we've got Howard, 29, and Emma, 17.
Right. Big whoops. Big whoops
big,
on that.
Big whoopsie. And then that's the scene where they're talking about, like, oh, you must love Japanese girls because they scrub your back or something. I'm like, what? What was the 70s in Texarkana?
What's funny is there is actually some good plotting narrative here, because they reveal that he's 29, she's 17, but the cops had just talked about telling all the college kids to not go to Lover's Lane, but they didn't tell the almost middle-aged people to not take their teenagers to Lover's Lane. So it all does kind of click together.
It all clicks together. Yep, that makes sense.
And that's why they die, which that is the scene. So that's the rainy night scene. Right there,
yes.
They go to Lover's Lane, and the sheriff is just kind of like, you know, I have a feeling. I'm going to go, you know, stake out Lover's Lane. It is pouring, like serious movie rain, and it is so clearly shot during the middle of the day. There are tree shadows in the grass. They just put, like, a blue tint on it.
No, I remember in the next scene, the next scene's when they start talking about, like, oh, that's when the town started dreading sundown. And I was like, but the scene was just at the day. Like, I didn't even realize they wanted you to think it was at nighttime. I was just like, weird that the killer's, like, going out mid-afternoon.
Oh, yeah. No, that was supposed to be night. Didn't you notice the blue tint? I guess that was there.
I just thought it was raining.
No, it was raining. So he finds the abandoned vehicle, hears gunshots, goes looking around, and that's when he finds Harold laying dead in the grass, and then Emma's dead body is tied to a tree, and she's shot in the back.
That was cool. And I mean, it's like disturbing to look at.
Oh yeah,
but that was cool.
Yeah, they did a decent job there with the gore, the bloodshot, the gunshot was cool, and then the phantom killer gets into the car and drives off, and the sheriff sees it, but he can't shoot him because he's out of range.
Yeah, which make.
I mean, I know nothing about guns, but
we'll see it later on. They just start shooting shotguns with no worries.
Oh yeah.
But that one, they're just like, oh, I gotta aim. Ah, not close enough.
He just shoots up at the sky and screams.
It was still early in the hysteria. Later, they're all like hysterical from the killer. So this, they still had reason to know to not just blast a shotgun off.
Exactly. Post this is when they're like, fear swept across the city. Oh, they talk about how that's when the gun store was sold out of guns.
Except they show one gun still in the shop.
That everyone's fighting over. So now it's like, now it's desperate times.
Well, I like they were showing everyone's freaking out, and they show the woman hanging a sheet over a window. Like, that's going to do anything.
Yep. The famed sheet defense. But then we get, as Jared mentioned, that's when we get the whole everyone dreaded sundown. So they say the name of the movie in the movie.
That's when you do a shot.
Oh, and then that's when we're introduced to Captain Morales, the Texas Ranger, the famed fancy Texas Ranger
assigned to the lone wolf.
Is that Boss Hogg?
Might as well be.
It's right. He's the one who sits down. I love this. He like come, what I would give to be able to like walk into a new job and sit down and just be like, we're going to do things my way.
Right, right.
But he had like some interesting facial hair. I feel like the facial hair warranted that authority.
There were two guys. There was like handlebar mustache guy who I feel like didn't get prominent until later.
And then he just came out of nowhere.
And then there's, you know, then there's Dukes of Hazzard man. So I don't know.
The Texas Ranger. He comes in. Which the sheriff deputy and stuff, they assign him Bumbling Benson to drive him around. They had like a 10-minute montage of Sparkplug forgetting his keys.
Oh yeah, the big giant sign that said keys.
But that was the scene where I'm like, oh, it's supposed to be funny, which was like his third moment in the movie before I realized he was even supposed to be a comic relief.
Right. What?
It went just heavy into comic relief.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was absolutely absurd.
Because the next scene was they were speeding, and he gets in an accident because they were driving all around. They stop suddenly. That's it. And the lone wolf comes out with the crooked cigar.
Like, oh, yeah. I think that was later when they had the like slow motion. Yeah. That was absolutely absurd. I think after this, they do like, oh, they have that scene where they're saying, you know, all the nuts come out of the woodwork confessing to the murders, and they show the guy confessing, and then Morales is in the background and he just comes into focus and he's shaking his head like, not this guy.
Not this guy.
Womp, womp. Then they decide to dress the policemen up like decoys
as
women, including Sparkplug, who's real upset about it. And then there's the weird scene of the cop getting like fake handsy with Sparkplug and the car.
That's the guy with the mustache, the handlebar.
Yep.
Yes. So now I know that this scene is technically like transphobic or like homophobic
it's
or like at least just borderline misogynistic, but there's a part of me that really thinks there's something, if we could do it through a modern lens, there's really something to the dress police officers up as women and have like the trans brigade go and hunt down a serial killer. Like, I think there is a way to like reappropriate this very garbage scene for like a modern progressive yeah. horror moment. Like, that would be so yeah. fucking rad.
You got Jared, you got to write that.
Okay. I don't know if I'm the person to write the trans cop movie, but
a white straight male.
Not sure it's my purview, but I will support it on Kickstarter.
Perfect. So then we cut to the prom scene. Just an immediate uh-oh. It's Sunday, April 14th. There's like awkward dancing. Teachers are sneaking schnapps. They have a
The teachers
group.
Were the ones who did it, right? That I was going to ask that question because yeah. I thought
those were the teachers.
The teachers spiked the punch.
But were they spiking the punch or
no,
were they
just
spiking
the glass.
Their own punch? That's what I was like. Oh, they were just drinking it themselves.
I just assumed you know, they poured it in the bowl. Okay.
Well, cool. They clearly needed it because of the group prayer that happened at the mm-hmm. at the prom. Mm-hmm. And then they listened to Auld Lang Syne. At prom? Isn't that a New Year's song? Am I crazy? Whatever. I guess Texas is
oh,
weird.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
what?
It is a New Year's song. Because I was like, maybe prom's at New Year, but like maybe the school years worked differently, but it had the like, you know,
literally
class
the date.
Of 40, whatever. Yeah, yeah, it had the classes and it was a split year. So no, they were
it was also
Old
junior
Zion
and
July.
Senior prom.
Oh yeah, that's true. It was junior and senior prom. Yep. But
did
yeah.
you guys not have prom together?
No, believe it or not. No.
That's so
did
weird.
You have it together?
We
yeah,
we,
it was always yeah. everybody went together. Like if it was senior prom, there would have been 20 people there.
Oh, that's a good point.
You know what? Here's the confession. I don't fucking know because I didn't go to prom.
Trisha's too cool for prom.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll she pretend like that's it. The reason. It was just that no one asked me. okay. The cops, like, clearly I was like, oh, this is prom. Prom's going to let out. Shit's going to get crazy. But no, the cops are on it. They're like, let's patrol. However, little young couple leave. Boy's like, let's go snuggle. I like how the girl's like, let's absolutely not go snuggle in a car. People are getting murdered. And boy's like,
in
no,
cars.
Baby. Yeah, we're just going to do it anyways. But then again, they don't snuggle. They just like no. fell asleep no. next to each other. The kids are missing a lot of like banging opportunities yeah. here. I don't understand.
I mean, I guess that answers why I was so impressed by how chill the cops were in the beginning about the Lover's Lane stuff, because apparently in this town, Lover's Lane is just like sitting next to each other quietly. So yeah. that's why nobody, like, that's why none of these Texas cops are really worked up about it.
Go do it anywhere else, even in front of your parents. There's nothing wrong with what you're doing.
Let's go up to Lover's Lane. Anymore. We'll go up to Lookout Point and be good Christians.
Yes. Don't touch me.
But didn't you notice they had about, I want to say 15 cops dressed as females. So there's at least 15 squad cars out there.
Right.
How
half
many
the, half the
Lover's
population
lanes
of
do
town.
They have?
How many what?
Lover's Lane do they have?
How big is Lover's Lane?
Yeah. Doesn't it overlook like a cliff usually or something?
Did they just go to every, desolate areas?
Probably, yeah.
What's weird, every other movie or thing I've ever seen, Lover's Lane, it's always depicted as like there's 30 cars parked with just teenagers going
right.
at it
just
with each
going
other.
At it.
This is the only time I've ever seen where it's just like, no, you're going to go be by yourself and you're not going to touch each other. That's how courting is done in Texas.
Yeah, Texarkana way. Well, this murder was, I think, by far the best scene of the movie.
This is my favorite
this
one.
Was real fun. So we get, you know, what is his name? The Phantom. The Phantom attacks, drags the guy mm-hmm. out of the car, attacks him, and then the girl is, like, chased in arguably, like, maybe the first traditional horror scene this movie has had thus far. And we're, like, over halfway done, I think, at this point. And then
it's hard to tell.
It's hard to tell. He grabs a tuba. Now, did he have the tuba with him?
No, she was.
Was it in the car? Was, okay, that's yeah. right. She was in the band. Okay.
I sincerely tuba. Thought he just that found
he,
a tuba.
He brought yeah. it. I kind of thought that too until Jake reminded me. Okay, good. This makes more sense. Plays
in
it,
my notes. Which, in my notes, I wrote down, do not understand trumpet murder.
Oh, wait, it's a trumpet. I'm sorry. It's not a
no,
tuba.
No, no. I think it is a Is it
it's
a trumpet or is
it a trumpet?
Yeah.
Oh. It's a trumpet. Because it has no, a slidey wait. Thing.
Uh-oh.
I enjoyed thinking I was wrong. So
no, I think it's a trumpet.
It's a
tuba. Tubas are bigger. Trumpet is the mm-hmm. one with the slider. Jared, you're right. You win.
All right.
I'm looking it up because
you win the
I don't
podcast.
Get yelled at.
I played a clarinet, a fancy woodwind instrument, but I believe this is a brass instrument, so I wouldn't know. But then he ties a knife to the end of the trumpet. Is it a trombone? It's a trombone.
It's a trombone.
It's a motherfucking trombone.
We're not editing this out.
We were all wrong, and this is staying in. Okay, so he brings out a trombone, ties a knife to the end of the, like, sliding part of the trombone, and then proceeds to, like, stab her by opening... We're all making the motion, and nobody can see it. Stabs her to death with, like, the trombone and the knife at the end of it.
Can I make a confession?
Yes.
I must have looked away when he tied the knife to it. And I spent that whole scene thinking he was just beating her to death with the trumpet part. And I was like, I don't understand this, and I don't think I enjoy it. But now it at least makes sense for
does
how
it
physically happened.
I don't know if it does. It still doesn't make sense. I don't know how you would it's completely unnecessary. Whatever.
I just thought he was hitting her with the trumpet.
Yeah, fair. And then he shoots the boy to... Does he shoot the boy to death?
The fence.
The boy goes to the fence and he shoots him. So now Morales is real pissed. And, like, national news and journalists have come to Texarkana to cover all of this. They go out to dinner with the psychiatrist who gives them the profile and says, oh, yeah, this guy is totally a sexual sadist. He'll likely never be caught. Could be somebody you see any day, all day. And that's when we get, like, the spooky music and they show the feet leaving the restaurant. Like, ooh, is the phantom killer in the restaurant? So I thought that was kind of fun.
I did not catch that.
You didn't catch
seriously.
That?
Seriously, yeah, no. I caught that when I read Wikipedia.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Wait, yeah, Jared, you saw that, right?
Yeah, they make the feet such a character and they use it really well throughout, like, the rest of the movie. I thought that was actually a really cool device.
I will say this movie does have, it did some things right. It just did most things really. I just don't think it knew what it wanted to be.
It was all over the place.
It's all over
the place. For example, the next scene.
Which is, that is when we get the man who claims that he was robbed and held at gunpoint by a man who said that he had killed 5 people in Texarkana. So then we do the insane spark plug chase scene. They get a call that there's an armed robbery at, like, a liquor store or some sort of store. We get the slow motion, like, comedic Western music driving into a puddle sequence.
I thought my Wi-Fi went out. I thought that I was having... Because the car just stopped moving, but the sounds kept happening. Yeah. I was just like, what is this?
Was,
like,
that the first slow-mo that we got to?
I think so.
Sure, yeah.
It was so fucking weird and out of place. So then I think basically that scene ends at that point. Morales is like, this guy's not the Phantom.
Well, yeah, he said, he said he was running.
Oh.
Because he was scared. Then he was I am the Phantom. I am.
Wait, Jared, what were you going to say?
Just the whole, the anchor of the scene is handlebar mustache cop's torso sweat, which is what stole my focus through the whole thing. So if you guys could actually catch me up on what this scene was, because my whole world was that cop's torso sweat.
We couldn't tell you.
It was everywhere. The whole world became his torso sweat.
I did notice that also. It didn't bother me as much as it bothered you, though.
I mean, I don't know if bothered is the word. It just was my whole world for, like, a solid 2 minutes.
Well, I do like he was, they were like, it's not him. Take him to the station. And the mustache, the handlebar mustache guy was like, let me sit back door with a back seat with him. And you're like, you already groped the one guy.
I was going to say, does he just want to, like, try to pop one of his balloon boobs again? Yeah. Is that...
How many other horror movies are happening in the background of this horror movie?
Are there actual horror movies happening? Because I still don't feel like this is a horror movie. I think, I have the next shot is summer's coming. And we know this because there's just naked little boys jumping in the river. And then they say that it's May 3rd. Is that summer? I don't think. When is the first day of summer? Whatever.
In the 70s it was, but now with global warming, it's not.
That's true. Times were different back then. So then we see we're introduced to the next victim, essentially. She goes home. She's brushing her hair, hears something, tells her husband.
This is Mary Jane. This is Mary Jane.
From Gilligan's Island, right?
Yeah. Don Wells. She's a national treasure. I love her.
She's a cutie patootie. What? Do you think she was like a git?
She was in this... I did not.
She was the woman of the last attack. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It didn't. She a little bit older, maybe?
Because, I mean, she was definitely acting like she was in a soap opera.
And she was, like, noticeably better looking than, other people that have been. Apologies to the other people
and
that
she
are in
was,
this movie.
She does end up being the equivalent of the final girl. Like, we don't really have the final girl trope yet, but she definitely was, like, they saved the, like, climactic attack for her. So I feel like she might have been a little bit of a get.
That makes sense. Yeah. Which, I mean, that scene was pretty cool, just basically because, like, so, yeah, she's home with her husband, and it's like, I hear something, and then the Phantom just shoots him in the head through the fucking window, which is, A total change of MO, and B, like, that's insane. That is legitimately scary that somebody can do that.
Yeah.
And we have, correct me, just in case I didn't miss anything, we have not learned anything about this person, right?
That is correct.
Like, there is no... Like, the cops don't even have theories about why he behaves this way. So we're just changing MOs, no rhyme or reason to it. That's
correct.
Wild.
Yep. Yeah, they just know they think he's a sexual sadist because he's biting boobs. But, yeah, so then there's, like, the, you know, crazy horror chase scene where he shoots her a couple times, and then she's still fine. He's grabbing a pickaxe and chasing her through, like, a cornfield. And then, luckily, she makes it to the neighbor's house, and... She lives. Like, the neighbor comes out. There's, like, a barking dog that scares the Phantom out, and she's all good. Or, you know, not all good. But
I don't
scared survives.
Him. He more just kind of sat there for a while going, should I do this? Is this worth it?
Decided.
What was the scene? Was that after or before? There was the scene, maybe it was the lovers after prom. I just remember the scene where he was, like, trying to sneak up on the car, and then they started to drive away.
That was the prom kids.
That was the prom kids? Because I just remember thinking, it's like, you win some, you lose somebody. You gotta give it up.
But he succeeded in that moment. He failed in this moment. The dog, car, moving vehicle, yes. Barking dog, no. Phantom killers, that's how he navigates. So... After this, you know, there's, like, people are afraid to be by their windows, which makes sense.
Yeah.
And then they talk about how people are, like, you know, constantly calling the police. And we see that woman. She calls the police and she thinks someone attacked her.
She's over there.
And then it's just a kitty. Mm-hmm. But then they literally have an audio womp womp. Did you notice? It was like, womp womp.
Yep, I have a note.
What is this
movie? I wrote, classic sound effect. Well, that whole montage really show how bad of police work they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
It was like 150 cop cars driving around. Well, no one's going to come out during that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're real sloppy. They're just getting desperate. And then why do they decide to just, like, drive around? Oh, no, they get a call that someone has found the car. The car that the sheriff had seen driving away at that second murder. So then there proceeds to be the most insane thing that I have ever seen in my life. Where they go to the car, they walk around, and they spot the Phantom killer, like, going for a hike in broad daylight in his murder outfit.
In the mask.
No.
With a gun?
This is what happened. That was supposed to be a night shoot.
And
he says, hey, what's down there? And they're like, oh, that's another, like, Lover Lanes type of spot. And so he's like, well, let's go. So I think they try to do Day for Night again, and they're just like, fuck it.
Wait, are you serious? Yeah. That was supposed to be night?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But I was so confused.
It looks like an episode of Star Trek. Like, it's just like, why is... We're just running through the hills in our murder mask with the gun?
With the gun. Then they have this insane shootout between train cars. More slow-mo.
That ruled. I'm sorry. I stand by that. That scene rules.
That was pretty fun.
I actually was like, please start shooting. Please start shooting. And they did.
They did. And then we got some adorable bloodhounds after that because they end up nicking him and he runs away, but there's blood. So they get the bloodhounds and they lose the scent. And then that's pretty much the end of the movie. I mean, they talk about the ball game. Yeah, they're like, ooh, yeah, like he went into the swamp and some men who go in never come out. And then our little friend narrator comes back on and he's like, you know, what happened? Nobody knows. Some say he was convicted of another crime, or some say he died in the swamps. And then some say, what is it? He's still living here and he's walking free. And then do you want to say it?
Well, no, you go for it.
Well, then we get the premiere of The Town That Dreaded Sundown. So this is a movie that shows the premiere of itself in its own movie.
It's beautiful.
And it shows
is
the line.
Is that the movie they're seeing?
Did you not notice that? Yes, Jared.
I didn't notice the marquee. They're watching this movie.
They are. So oh, the line of people.
I love this movie now. That's wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful.
10 out of 10 for Jared.
I just thought they were going to see a movie.
No, it's the marquee says the town that dreaded sundown. So people are in line and then they show like the ominous feet in the line for the premiere.
And it's injured. He limps now. It's like a reverse Kaiser Sose because he got shot in the leg.
Yep.
And
exactly.
So he does a little limp. So yep. Good.
Or is it Kaiser Sose?
Or is it Kaiser Sose? And that's
ooh,
it.
Ooh, prequel.
Yeah. And then they well, do like, that's, oh wait, sorry, go ahead.
Just because they do like recaps of all the characters.
Right.
And I love like 60s and 70s narration because they didn't know how to end stories. And I just love when you get like recaps for the narrators, just like, you know, Marianne from Gilligan's Island went on to heal entirely and live her life. And then the cop died a few years later.
Right.
And that's
right.
The last line of the movie. That's it. They're just like, Sheriff, what's his name? Well, he died eventually. Credits roll. It's just like, why?
They end on a womp, womp. They just use the same sound effect.
Womp, womp.
So yeah, that was the town that dreaded sundown. The Disney Dukes of Hazzard.
By the way, Texas Chainsaw Massacre came out 2 years before this.
Okay, yeah. There we go.
So they were trying for some stuff there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Hey guys, it's Trisha here. Just want to remind you to please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. Also, please be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Based on a True Scary and on Twitter at Based on a Scary. Plus, if you guys have a movie you want us to fact check or if you just want to tell us how much you love us, how much you hate us, or have any feedback in general, send us a message on our social channels or just send an email to basedonatruescary@gmail.com. We always want to hear from you guys and gals. So, yeah, let us know what you think. Thanks so much. And, okay, back to the show.
Well, okay, Jared, now we can go through the fact-checking portion of the okay. podcast. So I'm going to...
I feel like not a lick of it. I want to say,
yes.
I don't know.
It is all false. Yeah, so you know how this works. I'm going to ask questions. We will start you off easy. Just tell me if you think it is true or false. Do you think okay. there were some murders in Texarkana?
I do. I
yes.
do think that.
Okay, great. So,
I
yes.
think it, I also, my first question that I asked myself was, is there a town actually called Texarkana?
That would have been a good one. So. There is. Yeah.
Isn't there a song called Texarkana?
I feel like I've heard of it, yeah. but yeah.
Anyways.
So yes, true. They were called the
so
Texarkana.
This did happen.
It did happen. They were called the Texarkana Moonlight Murders. They were a series of murders and other violent crimes committed in and around Texarkana in the spring of 1946 by an unidentified serial killer known as the Phantom Killer or Phantom Slayer. The killer is credited with attacking 8 people within 10 weeks, 5 of whom were killed. And the attacks happened only on weekends between February and May. So yeah, it is true. And we can dive deeper from there, I guess. So good job, Jared. One point.
Thank you. 1 point.
Hooray.
Don't feel pressure. No one's keeping score.
I'm not. I'm limber. I'm loose. Let's go.
Cool. So do you think that this Phantom Killer and or Phantom Slayer wore a pillowcase on his face like in the film?
I think no.
He actually did.
Really?
That one is true. So
that's cool.
Yeah. The survivors of these attacks, a few of them, they described the man as wearing a white cloth mask, which resembled or could possibly be a pillowcase, eyes cut out, and the mouth was cut out as well. They also claimed he was around 6 feet tall. So kind of a shorty. Just kidding.
So does this... So do you think this is like the precursor to the whole masked killer genre? Like the fact,
that's a good question.
I just feel like that doesn't actually happen that often, you know, because
yeah.
most killers finish the job. You know what I'm saying?
Because this was the 40s.
This yeah. wasn't. This was 1946. Yeah. So that entirely possible that this was inspiration.
The first I thought think that wore a mask was Zodiac. And that was late 60s, 70s.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which and he wore Zodiac wore like a more boring mask, right? He just wore like a ski mask or something.
No, he wore like a whole thing. He had a whole little like cape on that a chest thing that said had a Zodiac symbol. We could go down that path all day.
I
how do I not know that?
I will say, I think the pillowcase was like, it was actually a little bit creepy.
It was so creepy.
Even though he was kind of a ridiculous killer, like the pillowcase and sort of the faceless look is scary. Like, I always think that in the second Friday the 13th, when Jason just has the burlap sack before he gets the hockey mask, like, he's kind of the scariest in that one.
Totally.
I don't know. I'm feeling it.
Simple is best.
Simple is better. So let's get into the first attack. Sunday, March 3rd, we've got the couple on Lover's Lane. They survive the attack, but this is where the killer chewed on the girl's back, stomach, and breasts. Do you think that that is kind of like a similar summary to one of the attacks of the killer?
No, I mean, I feel like it's possible that he like maybe raped somebody, but I don't know about the chewing thing. That feels very dramatic to me.
Wow.
So you kind of like, you like actually fucking nailed that.
Is that ice cold? Okay, good. Not good. Terrible. Horrible tragedy.
Well, yes, horrible. I know. It's interesting that this is a fun dichotomy that we get into when we get into this.
It just felt like watching it, it felt like that was such a weird thing to happen. And that to me just felt like a thing that you would do to make somebody super
creepy,
fucking scary. Right. Yeah, it's just like, oh, he doesn't even, it's not a rape thing, he's got weirder shit than that.
Yeah, no, you literally nailed it. So one thing I will say that is super fucking annoying, and we've done this, has happened in like multiple movies that we've done so far, so they get the goddamn dates wrong seemingly for no reason. So
why?
The first attack actually took place on February 22nd, 1946, not March 3rd. Like, what?
Why change it?
I have no idea. The actual victims' names were Jimmy Hollis, who was 25, and his girlfriend, Mary Jean Larry, who was 19. So not like a horrible age difference, but like still ooky. Still ooky. They were
And it's
apart.
Weird that they made it worse in the movie.
They did. So they were parked on Lover's Lane, and then a man wearing a pillowcase appeared and shined a flashlight in the window, and they originally thought that it was a prank and said, oh, you have the wrong person. But the killer responded, I don't want to kill you, fella, so do what I say. And then he ordered them to step out of the car and told Jimmy, quote, take off your goddamn britches, then smacked him on the head with a pistol so hard that it fractured his skull, and Mary said it was so loud that she thought it was a gunshot. He then, He then struck Mary and told her to run, which she did, but then he caught up to her. He sexually assaulted her with his gun, and then she was able to still get away. I know, it was bad news. But she was able to get away. She woke a neighbor, got them to call the police. Meanwhile, Jimmy was able to move, and he is actually the one who flagged down a car on the side of the road. So both did survive. They sort of mixed up the gender on like who flagged down the car, and then the killer didn't bite anyone, but did like sexually assault the girl. So like pulled some stuff. Again, the date thing just drives me insane, but
it's just a weird thing to do. Do you think it has to do with like, I don't know, were they like, oh, it'd be snowing if it was February? I don't know how Texas works. It gets cold.
Is there ever snow in Texas?
I don't think that
it gets cold at night.
Jared, you're from Florida.
They're different places. Florida's another planet, man. I don't know anything about anywhere.
That's valid.
Why do you think they changed it to the biting thing?
Because I think it's exactly what Jared said. It's the whole, like, he didn't rape them, but he's still creepy.
Oh, it's right. Weird. It's weird. Like weird.
Yeah. 100%.
But being sexually assaulted with a gun, totally
not
normal.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
Not creepy.
Oh,
I feel like people would have walked out of that in the 70s. Like, I feel like if you went and saw, like a trashy, like,
that's true,
drive-in movie, and they were just, like, raped with a gun, people would be like,
maybe it was too gruesome.
Out, yeah. I'm out.
Because Last House on the Left was really gory and people all freaked out over it. That's true. That's a good point.
They got mad.
I'll shut the fuck up.
I mean, I got mad at Last House on the Left when I saw it, like, you know, 45 years later.
Yeah, it's no good. All right, so let's move on to the second attack. This was the March 24th attack, where the woman and the man were both shot, and the woman was tied to the tree, and then the sheriff was there and almost caught the killer. Do you think that that is kind of a similar description of what happened for the second attack?
Like, woman tied to the tree and sheriff almost saw him?
Yeah.
I feel like woman tied to a tree, maybe, but I don't know about sheriff almost seeing him. That feels like drama.
So this one was pretty false. Totally was with you. I was shocked that they made the tree tying thing up because he did that to both of his female victims.
Yeah, yeah, that was like his thing.
That was like his signature. But that, I will say 100%, the killer, the actual killer, did not do that ever. So,
well, you know, in vaudeville, everybody's got to have a gimmick. So
it's true. Oof. We'll give the film credit. They got the date right this time. So bravo. Because
but then changed the murder.
Just changed the murder completely. Yeah. So this was Richard L. Griffin, who was 29, and his girlfriend of 6 weeks, Polly Ann Moore, who was 17. So
Jesus.
That was not the movie. That
and
was
you know,
real
then,
life.
And then it cuts to the prom scene later, and there are no grown-ups at that prom, which I thought was a disservice to the story they were telling. Like, if you're going to do this, there should have been 40-year-old men dancing at prom, because
Come
that's
on.
Clearly the narrative they're establishing.
That's where they're meeting all of their girlfriends. So, oh, man. So Richard and Polly, they were not found by the sheriff. Yeah, 100% right, Jared. There was no... Sheriff never saw the killers. He never got away. Nobody ever saw this person besides the victims. So instead, a passing motorist spotted the car near Lover's Lane at about 8:30 a.m., approached the vehicle, thought that the kids inside, well, one kid and then the man were sleeping. But it turns out they'd both been shot in the back of the head. There was actually blood-soaked grass near the car. So the police believe that they may have been killed outside of the car and then placed inside. But yeah, not tied to the trees. None of that. No, that's real. So yeah.
That's kind of freaky.
Yeah. It's not fun.
No, it's not fun
not
at all.
Not having fun.
No.
I was like, Jake, you want to chime in? There's not much to say.
No.
It was unpleasant for everybody.
Yes, and no one was happy. So how about, here's kind of a fun one. So in the movie, they bring in the famed Texas Ranger, Captain Morales. He was the celebrity. Do we think that in real life there was like a famed ranger or like cop brought
yes,
in?
Yes, Walker, Texas Ranger.
Was Walker, Texas Ranger brought in?
I agree.
Yes, it is actually true. So they were called
Walker,
in.
Walker, Texas Ranger.
It wasn't Chucky. Chucky baby. They didn't bring in Chuck.
He was 5 years old, probably.
No, it was a gentleman named M.T. Lone Wolf Gonzalez. So that was his nickname. He was the most well-known of the Texas Rangers, was a big deal. That's actually part of the reason why it drew a lot of national news outlets to the town.
Interesting.
Yeah, I got this big hot shot.
So I wonder what it takes to be like a known Texas Ranger.
It's so funny. I looked into this guy because I was like, I wanted to provide more color of why he was so popular, but I couldn't really find anything. I guess he was just, he was good.
I think you have to go rogue a lot. I think you have to be someone who like plays by your own rules.
Yeah.
And have some interesting facial hair probably.
And you don't partner with anyone.
No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're a lone wolf.
He's a lone wolf. Literally. So how about they talk about the fear was so rampant that the stores in town ran out of guns. Do you think that that actually happened?
Well, how many stores carried guns in this town?
Don't dissect the question, Jared.
Okay. In Texas, no, I don't think they ran out of guns.
So valid, but it's actually true. Maybe it was a different place. I have no idea. So the murders, like everybody did, they freaked out, right? And people were locking themselves indoors. Most businesses lost customers at nighttime. And then all the stores in town sold out of guns, ammunition, locks, and other protective devices.
Could you buy these things at the grocery store? What
do you mean Texas that
all these towns ran out of guns?
I'm assuming that, like, I don't know if there were gun stores back then.
Or
I
mean, maybe there was just, like, three gun stores or two gun stores.
I mean, it was this, like, peaceful, booming town. Maybe they just had thought that they didn't need them. And so, yeah, there was a freaking gun shortage. Who knows? They said that the town was basically ready for war, though.
Oh, wow.
Oh, also, some people rigged up alarm systems around their homes that consisted of stringing attached pots and pans.
Like,
oh, they home aloned it.
Yep.
They home, yeah, 100%. They also apparently used cutouts of Michael Jordan and put them in the windows. So I'm kidding.
Proven deterrent.
Do you like how I have a reading voice? All right. How about the bumbling cop? Do we think that in real life there was a cop Benson who was like fucking shit up left and right?
Psychopathic Barney Fife? No, I don't.
Yeah.
That has to be the director being like, I've got an idea.
100%. Yep, that was totally fake.
I want to use the wah wah sound effect.
And he wanted to be dressed in drag, apparently. Yep. That was, yeah.
Because I get like just early genre movies. I get that they're like, we should have a comic relief because this is too heavy. Like, I get that storyteller instinct. And then just to botch it so hard is really interesting. Like, I don't, it's like watching, you know, preschoolers draw. It's just like, that's not what a house looks like, but I see what you're trying to do.
Oh, poor Charles B. Pierce. He did try.
He did some, you know, I mean, all respect. He was a trend. He paved a way.
He did. Okay. So how about, it's in my notes, it's tuba death, but as I've learned now, it's a trombone. Okay, so yes, prom kids. Do we think that there were two prom kids and that potentially one of them got murdered with a trombone and or tuba? Jared, thoughts?
I don't think that happened, but I really hope it did. I mean, you know, I hope nobody ever got murdered in a horrific way.
That's
but like
weird.
Oh, it would be a lot of fun if that one was true, but I don't think it is.
So it is not true.
That's kind of half. It's kind of a quarter true.
There are some interesting parallels.
Yes.
So again, they got the date right. April 14th. It was late night on Saturday the 13th. So we'll call it April 14th. Betty Jo Booker, who was 15, was playing her alto saxophone in her regular weekly gig with her band, the Rhythm Airs. And then her boyfriend, Paul Martin, who was 16, an appropriately aged couple for once. Congratulations, everyone.
Lovely. Good for them.
Right. He picked her up around 1:30 a.m. from practice. And that was the last time that they were ever seen alive. So their bodies were found around. Paul's body was found at 6:30 a.m. on the side of the road. He'd been shot 4 times. So kind of similar to the film in his death. And then Betty's body was found hours later. She was about 2 miles away from him, laying in the grass near a tree, not tied to a tree. She'd been shot twice. So no saxophone. I have saxophone written here. No. Well, they didn't use her saxophone. No instrument.
No brass
death.
Section murder.
Exactly. Yeah. They were just shot. But she did. So clearly the director and writer were like, can we like work in the fact that she was in a band?
Well,
so she was.
This
in
is
a
why
band.
I think her saxophone was missing for 6 months.
Yes.
So I think what happened was the guy who played the Phantom took one improv class and he's like, check this out, guys. I have a trombone. What if we tie a knife to this and murder her?
And Charles was like, yes, and baby, let's do it.
You love to see it.
You do. Oh my gosh. Okay. How about the false confessions? So there's the whole thing about people falsely confessing to the murder. Do you think that in real life they were bombarded with false confessions?
I do. I don't know if like it was the way it was depicted in the movie, but I'm sure somebody tried to get attention for this. Yeah, that like always happens.
I feel like that's
right?
A common thing.
I asked this question because I wanted to talk about the police officers or just get their names in there. So because I, you know, just in case they were listening, I think that they're unfortunately passed. But the families, if there are two listeners, here you go. So Sheriff Deputy Tillman Byron Johnson and State Police Detective Max Andrew Tackett were two of the leads on the case. And they recalled 9 people tried to convince them that they were the Phantom. And here's a great quote. So Tackett said, in every case, they couldn't have been because their stories didn't jibe with what the details were of the case. You don't tell everyone you know about what's happening in a case. When it gets into the papers, the real criminals find out how much you know, and the confessors will fit those facts into their confessions. You got to keep 2 or 3 pertinent facts to protect yourself from all those crackpots. Love it.
All right.
Good. Thank you.
Texas cops.
Yes.
This was the first movie we've seen with there was a lot of newspaper people in this, reporters, that's what we call them,
the newspaper people.
That there wasn't like, who leaked it to the press? They just were like, yeah, people came and admitted it to us.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Anyways, we can cut that out
because they were too busy having Benson forget his keys. Okay, 4th crime here. We've got the May 3rd murder. The couple murdered in their home. The woman was shot and chased but survived. Do you think that the details around that are potentially true?
I think so. That seems plausible.
Yeah, So mm-hmm. this
but he didn't get the last one.
Yeah.
Shame.
You know, he's all over the place. So this one is this one's actually really true, I would say, the most true out of all of them. So we've got Virgil Starks, who was 37, and his wife Katie, who was 36. They were home when Katie heard a noise outside. I know.
I was so prepared for you to say like 12.
Age appropriate. So Katie heard a noise outside and then asked Virgil to turn down his music. And then seconds later, two shots were fired into the back of his head through a nearby window. So again, like that's fucking terrifying. Katie realized he was dead.
That's something I think about sometimes.
Oh, right.
Because you're on the first floor.
I sure am.
Just to remind you.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
I see a window right behind you.
Oh, yeah. Any second. Just and be awful.
Ugh,
well, in the movie, you get shot twice. And
for our
still
listeners,
kind of
I just
around.
Pantomimed a bullet hitting me in the head. Okay. But
beautiful.
This is an audio production. So.
Yeah, I've never been never thought about being scared to sit by windows, but that's horrifying and apparently true. Well, it gets worse. So
good.
Yeah, always fun. So Katie realizes that he's dead and goes to call the police. And as she grabs the phone, she's shot twice in the face. She survives, but in her words, she's blinded by her own blood. The killer comes into the house and chases her around, where she claims that she, quote, left a virtual river of blood and teeth behind her as she ran through the house. She was like she was kind of running around, you know, obviously like scattered and crazy. She wanted to leave a note, but like ultimately she just got out of there. She's like, he's going to kill me. I should like leave some sort of note. But she left and then was able to run 50 yards to a neighbor's house who woke up to her screaming. And then she apparently yelled, "Virgil's dead," and then collapsed. And so neighbors were able to get her to the hospital and she survived.
Wow.
Yeah.
That girl's strong.
Right? Ugh.
That's why they pulled out the Marianne money.
There it
exactly.
is.
John Wells action.
They had to honor this badass lady. So how about the final chase scene? Do we think that the sheriff saw? I kind of gave this one away, but do they think that they found the killer hiking during the day with
his
mask
on? Broad daylight,
yeah.
And had a shootout mm-hmm. over a train? Yep. I don't think that happened.
Correct. That is correct. We'll edit that one out. That's
which
boring.
Is a shame. That's a shame.
It is a shame. Because, oh my God, that was ridiculous. Okay, last question.
I thought it was nice. I thought it was a nice way to end the story. Like, I don't know. It was like, it's ridiculous, but I don't know. I mean, you have an unsolved murder case, and we don't really have a single... Because we did... Like, this movie had no protagonist mm-hmm. or even full character. So, I don't know. I just think, like, because we weren't following a final girl per normal, and, like, even the cops themselves weren't really... I don't feel like they were protagonist characters.
There really were no
sort
characters.
Of like,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was just events. And it like contributes to the documentary feel, I guess, yeah. which is interesting. But it just feels like you're watching events. And so there's no personal sort of climax the story can have. So I feel like, you know, that was an interesting invention, like train shootout.
I wanted them to meet.
Right.
Like, at
to
least
give
once.
It like a mm-hmm. classic movie feel. Because what
I wrote down too, it's like when he jumped right as he pulled that like Superman move and just like ran for it. It's like, hey man, you earned it. You got away. you went for it. So
no, yeah. Fun. No, it was fun. But it was in fact fabricated. So last
yes, I wouldn't root for the real killer doing this. I'm only rooting for the fictional.
good to clarify.
Thanks for clarifying, yeah.
Good to clarify. So last question. In the movie, they say he was never found. Do you think that in real life, the killer was never caught or nobody was ever charged for the murders?
Ooh, yeah, I think so. Otherwise, why would this be a famous story?
True. You're a smart gentleman. So, yeah, as of today, the case remains unsolved. There were two suspects found during the first few years of the investigation that were really good suspects. So the first was 29-year-old Yule Swinney, who was a local car thief. Apparently, his wife provided a lot of damning information and even described one of the murders in detail. And this was details that had not been leaked or hadn't been talked about. But there just wasn't enough evidence to link him to any of the scenes. So he was never charged with the murders. Mm-hmm. But then he did spend most of his life in jail for auto theft. And then the other was 18-year-old college student H.B. Duty, that was his nickname, Tennyson. He killed himself in 1948, leaving a note confessing to some of the murders. But outside of this, there were almost 400 suspects that were arrested throughout the investigation, which again only lasted a couple months. Hmm. So kind of insane. Kind of insane. All right, Jake, you got one?
So when this movie came out, at the premiere, was the Phantom there?
Ooh. Oh.
Well, I feel like there's just absolutely no way to know that, but
yeah, from I totally
what
know, I don't know.
But from what I've gleaned, I like to think he was.
I'm gonna go with true.
I would have gone too. If I were a Phantom. I would have been like, let's see what they did.
He at least limped outside of the theater. I'll give you that.
Yes.
That part was
he
true.
He limped by some theater.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. Oh, man. Well, awesome. Good job, Jared.
Did we
nicely
keep
done.
Track of the points?
Yay.
Did I win?
No, excellent. We never do. So now we like to give a rating of our thoughts on the validity of the film. So 1 through 10 out of 10.
1 out of 10 spark plugs.
Spark plugs. Yeah, we'll use spark plugs as our
This
as
is
our
on the
here.
Validity or the quality of the film?
This is, yeah, oh, no, not the quality. We can do that next. So, like, how well you think the movie portrayed the actual events? 1 through 10 out of 10, spark plugs. What do you
think? I would go with, like, 8. I feel like there was, like, a couple of dramatic liberties taken, but there was no, like, total fanciful, except for, like, sidekick cop. But in terms of, like, the attacks, there were, like, details of what happened changed, but all the attacks that happened in the movie did happen. So I feel like it's not a solid 9 or 10, but I feel like 8's pretty solid.
I think that's a little generous for me. I'll give it a 6. you're much nicer than me, that's for sure. I'll give it a 6. Because they were just, I mean, the date thing just pisses me off. That's like a really personal pet peeve of mine. And then they took a lot of liberties, but yeah, I mean, 6.
They do. I'm not a detail guy. I'm very general. I'm just like, some people got murdered. So it is a true story.
Dig, ding, ding.
I think we've also done, this is our 10th one. So
that's fair. We're getting.
Because I would say 6 too.
You're going to say 6?
Mostly because all the music is exactly how I think played in the 1946.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Wow, you guys are really, getting pretty good at this.
Yeah. And then what would you say your rating for the actual film is, just out of curiosity?
Oh, I would give that a 6. I feel like that's my 6. It's like definitely too interesting and unique.
That also feels
I know, but like, hear me out, because I know it does, but like there's too much like weirdness and uniqueness to, like, I'm not talking about necessarily the quality of the direction or the filmmaking itself or any element of it, but something happened there that it's, you know, what, 50 years later and we're still watching this movie and it's not just that it's a good title and a good poster
design.
And
we remade it.
Like,
there's
something to this movie that is, like, interesting and kind of disturbing. And I don't know, there's a hook there that I think deserves some credit.
I think that's fair. Like, it did do a lot of cool things and, like, at first, I really, really liked it. And then I think once it started to get more and more ridiculous, I was kind of like, oh, my God. And the fact that it wasn't scary. I think that's what bothered me, is that, like, this movie did not, it's not scary at all.
There was a few, like, scenes that I'm like, oh, that was kind of cool. But they missed a couple good, like, jump scares or overall, like,
creepy. And was this the first time, the first time we got the scene of, because it's literally every time there's a parody or you need a shorthand for, like, teenage horror scenario, it's two kids in a car. Like, it's literally the setup for the hook for the hand urban legend. Like, there's so many of those, and I feel like this movie was so early. Was this where we get that trope of, like, teenagers in a car and, like, oh, I heard something?
I'm gonna say that probably the 50s,
but I mean, it's possible that the real events that inspired this were maybe that came from, right? Because that's the 40s, and, like, you know, he legit was killing people, like, around and on Lover's Lane.
That would make serial sense. Killers before the 40s, so I think so.
No, that wasn't a thing. No,
just not a thing.
Oh, man. Well, this was so fun. Jared, do you have anything that you want to promote while you have a microphone in front of you?
No, definitely check out thedad.com. If you like video gaming, we play games on the Dad Gaming Facebook page. So it's a fun little community for dads, but you don't have to be a parent. You just have to like corny dad jokes. And then check out my web series. I've got Jared Post to Personal and Commuters, both of which are on YouTube. And I don't know, follow me on Twitter. Nobody follows me on Twitter. So follow Captain Outer Space on Twitter.
Yay. Well, this was so much fun. Thanks so much for doing this. Thanks for logging in from New York and staying up late with us.
My pleasure. This was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me. I love horror movies. Yeah, you guys are awesome. And good times all around.
Yay.
Thank you.
And then thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.